Good morning.
Good morning.
Psalm 15 begins with a question. O Lord, who may dwell in your tent? Who may live on your holy hill? It's not just any question, that is the question. Who belongs in the presence of God? Who can dwell near God's holiness and not be overwhelmed, consumed? Who can live in God's tent? That place of worship, of nearness, of glory, and not be undone. This is not an academic question. It's a longing. You can hear it in the phrasing, who can dwell, who can live there? This is not just about entering a sacred space once a week. This is about forming life around God's presence, about building your home, daily rhythms, your inner world around the reality of a holy God. There are places in this world that feel sacred. Are or not, doesn't matter. They just feel important. Maybe for you it's a place like this, or a mountaintop, or some place you like to visit on a regular basis. Or maybe it's a childhood church, or your grandmother's table, or the woods behind your house, places where you just feel more alive, more whole, safe, awakened, alert, aware. And people have different reactions to those kinds of places. In some places, some people find themselves at peace in a moment like that. Others can find themselves absolutely overwhelmed by it all. I grew up with a telescope, and we use that telescope on a regular basis. Long story short, my parents bought the telescope right before I was born because just prior to my arrival was the arrival of Halley's Comet. And so they bought the biggest telescope that they could find and afford, and they found the emptiest field that they could hop the fence with the telescope, and they hopped that fence and watched Halley's Comet. And so I grew up with that telescope, and I loved looking at the spot on Jupiter and the rings around Saturn, and I found wonder there. I found awe. I have a friend, though, who cannot think about space, let alone look through a telescope, because she feels that same sense of awe about space, but in a very different way. For her, that's overwhelming, to the extent that she is deathly afraid of the existential crisis that comes from realizing how big space is. It's the same sense of awe, but received two very different ways. I don't know which one Psalm 15 comes from. I don't know if this is a comforting sense of awe, or if this is a terrified sense of awe. Who could possibly live next to a God as perfect as that? It's a strange question, and I imagine for all of you, it's going to hit one of two spots. It's either going to elicit a sense of wonder and amazement, or it's going to overwhelm you with dread and fear, because the answer is going to be not something like me. I think that's where Psalm 15 is coming from. At least today, with the clouds where they are, I think that's how this reads. It reads like somebody who doesn't think they stand a chance of being in the presence of something as holy and as amazing as God. You see this in the Gospels too. Zacchaeus climbs a tree to get a glimpse. He doesn't dare try to push into the crowd and be with Jesus or talk to him, but he just is content being in a tree from a distance. Or the woman whose name we don't know, who doesn't even want to bother Jesus with talking to him, she just wants to touch his cloak as he passes by. That's a Psalm 15 demeanor. This is an invitation, I think, to ask, what kind of life does it take to stay in a place of holiness with God? Not just to visit, but to dwell with it. What would it cost me, of all people, to stay in a place like that? So as you think about that question, the word of the Lord from Psalm 15, Lord, who may dwell in your tent? Who may live on your holy hill? Those who walk blamelessly, do what is right, speak the truth from their heart, who do not slander with their tongue and do no evil to their friends, nor take up a reproach against their neighbors, in whose eyes the wicked are despised. But those who honor those who fear the Lord, who stand by their oath, even to the hurt, even to their hurt, who do not lend money at interest and do not take a bribe against the innocent, those who do these things shall never be moved. That's the vision. A life of integrity, a community where truth is spoken, where neighbors are protected, where the vulnerable are defended, where promises are kept, a world rooted in justice, compassion, a world where holiness is not just a concept, but it is a daily way of life. That sounds beautiful. It also sounds intimidating or impossible. How cynical have we become? Do you read Psalm 15 and think this is all just a pipe dream? Is this all just something that we strive for, but we all accept could never be achieved? Because as soon as you hear the list in Psalm 15 of what it takes to dwell in God's presence, you start to measure, don't you? You wonder, do I belong there? Am I this kind of person? And if, like me, you very quickly realize before you get to the end of Psalm 15 that you're not, what then? If I'm not this Psalm 15 person, if there's no hope for me to dwell in the house of the Lord, then what then? And the text doesn't offer much or any comfort to the self-sufficient. It doesn't lower the bar any. It doesn't say, and try your best to attain these things and God will understand. It says blameless, righteous, honest, just, faithful. And we, on most days, say that we had hoped that we could be that kind of person. But if we're honest, we realize that something about this picture feels far off. Not just because we fall short, but because the very world around us falls short. Our culture is one of curated appearances. It's surrounding us with transactional relationships. If you do this for me, then I will do this for you. And as long as we both stay in our lanes, the whole system will survive. There's subtle deception left and right. We've grown used to the spin of it all, the self-promotion. We've acclimated ourselves to institutions that fail to protect the vulnerable, to relationships that we always assume are going to falter, because it's just no longer convenient to keep your word anymore. We'd hoped for more, and yet, even in the face of all that, Psalm 15 stands like this window into another world. This world where it's not perfect, but there's a presence to it. Not of earning, but of dwelling. Not of production, but of being. Psalm 15 is this window into a place where you could take your family on vacation and not feel guilty about it. Psalm 15 is this window into a universe in which you could miss a deadline and the world keeps on spinning. It's this glimpse into this alternate reality where you could be enough. Hold that tension just a little bit longer. Because here's where the psalm invites a deeper look. Our Christian tradition doesn't stop at the end of Psalm 15. It doesn't read isolation into this text. It reads into this conversation with the gospel something else. In conversation with the gospel, Psalm 15 means that we not only look at what kind of life the psalm is describing, but at the one who makes that life possible. The gospels assume Psalm 15 is possible, not far off. In today's reading from Colossians 1, Paul gives us this new vision, not one that lowers the bar, but one that reframes our place within the standard of things. He, that is Christ, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. In him all things in heaven and on earth were created. Same God you find in Psalm 15. He himself is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is still the amazing sense of awe and wonder that we have in Psalm 15. And you, who were once estranged and hostile in mind, doing all sorts of evil things, he has now reconciled in his fleshly body through death. Same God, same you. The difference is what Christ has done to bridge that gap between a utopian vision of reality and us. Why? Paul doesn't just say that Christ is holy. He says that Christ is the one in whom all things hold together. He's the emulsifying agent. Not all of you grew up in a chemistry household, so let's back this up a little bit. He's the egg whites in your cake batter. We can do this a whole bunch of different ways, but we don't have time for all of them. An emulsifying agent is the thing that takes two things that can't be together and holds them together. Water and oil cannot mix is not a true statement. You just have to add an emulsifying agent. You have to add something in which they can blend together and holds it together. Christ is that thing that holds these opposites of oil and water together in one spot. So the psalm asks a question. Who could possibly dwell with God? How can oil and water ever mix? And Paul, the baker in this instance, adds, well, it's simple. Christ dwells in you. The psalmist is asking the wrong question. Who can possibly live with God? And Psalms doesn't imagine the possibility of God dwelling with us. And so Paul turns the whole thing on his head. He dwells in you. Christ is not only the gate to holiness, he is the holy tent itself. He is the presence of God made known and shared. And because of him, we are not merely visitors to holiness, we are being made holy. The life of Psalm 15, the life that it describes, is not a list of requirements for entry. It's a portrait of what happens when grace takes root. It is what we begin to look like when Christ takes up residence in us. Who could possibly dwell with God is a terrifying, impossible question. But if God was willing to dwell in us, that's much more doable. This idea of dwelling with God is not new. It's always been. This is the desire from the very beginning. Years ago, I preached a similar sermon, not the same one. I never reuse sermons, whatever that's worth. And I made a point, and I thought it was a normal point, and I got tons of pushback, and I had elder meeting after elder meeting to try to defend my theological status. I don't want to do that today. Please, please, please. I said something that I didn't think was controversial. Apparently it was. God is just as interested in saving you as you are interested in being saved. In other words, one of the motivations for Jesus going to the cross was not just that you could be in right standing, but because God so desperately wanted to be with you. It's what God wanted. Not for you, but God just wanted. That's what we see in this long arc of biblical presence. From the very beginning to the very end, God has always been trying to fix this problem of, I want to be with this people. How can I make that work? Trying one emulsifying agent after another to make it work. It's this long story arc of divine presence trying to draw near to people who don't ever want to stay near. In the garden, God walks with Adam and Eve in the cool of the day. And now in July in Virginia, you garden even in the cool of the day and you're hot and sweaty and humid. We had something great and it's gone. We messed that up. Sin fractured that communion and humanity was cast out. Not beyond God's love or desire, but into this new kind of awful middle distance. And even then, God didn't abandon the desire to dwell amongst us. In the wilderness, God gave Israel the tabernacle, a tent of meeting, and said, I stay in the tent, you take the tent with you, that we can make this work. God's glory could dwell in the tent, and Moses could speak to the Lord as one speaks with a friend. And it kind of sort of worked for 5 minutes. But when it didn't, we tried the temple. The temple became a more permanent symbol of divine presence in Jerusalem, this fixed place where heaven and earth could touch. But even these structures, beautiful and sacred as they were, could not permanently restore that nearness that was broken. The whole of the Old Testament and the whole of the New Testament is this one long story arc of trying to figure out how to put God and people in the same place at the same time and then not kill each other. And then comes this turning point where the Word becomes flesh, dwells among us. The Gospel of John uses the word tabernacled. Jesus tabernacled. He camped among us. In Jesus, God doesn't just appear, he moves in. If you can't dwell on my holy hill, I'll dwell in your lowly valley. I'll move in there. Let's try that. In Jesus, God comes close. And when Christ dies and rises, that curtain of the temple, that veil is torn in half from top to bottom, and the Spirit of God is poured out. The presence of God is no longer bound to buildings or mountaintops, but poured into people. Of all things, we become temples of the Holy Spirit. God desires to dwell in us, and it's not symbolic, it's personal. It's permanent. It changes things. Psalm 15 is a question in the middle of that story. Who could possibly dwell with God? And Paul says, Jesus could, and he could also dwell with you. So if we all meet at Jesus' place, we could stay together. It's through Christ that this answer becomes both bold and somehow intimate. Those in whom God has made a home. And that changes everything. It reframes the psalm, not as a moral checklist, but as a spiritual mirror, a reflection of what God is forming in us through the Spirit. You're not these things, but the one who dwells in you is these things. Therefore, you are these things. It shifts the question from, am I good enough to belong here, to what might God be shaping in me as I dwell in God's presence? Am I changing enough to fit in here, to look like I'm part of this, to be part of this? Holiness becomes not a performance, but a posture. Not something that we can achieve, but something that we receive. And more importantly, something that we can embody. We talk a lot about incarnation, where Christ becomes one of us. There's the second half of that bit, though, where we also start to embody Christ and become carriers of the very presence and the very image of God. As much as Christ chose to become one of us, he chose to become one of us so that we might become one like God. The scariest, most concise phrasing in the entire of all of Scripture, in my opinion, is in Paul's simple little words in 2 Corinthians. God made him who knew no sin to be sin so that you could become the righteousness of God. Christ chose to dwell with us, become one of us, so that we could dwell with God and become one like God. That's how you answer the Psalm 15 riddle. He reinforces this in Luke 10 when he enters the home of Mary and Martha. Mary sits at his feet listening. Martha's distracted by serving. And Jesus doesn't rebuke Martha for working. He simply names that Mary has chosen something better. You Marthas in the room think this is a terrible story. I get that. I know why it's problematic. But just for like 5 seconds, overlook that and see something else. Jesus is simply naming that Mary has chosen something worthwhile. Mary dwells. She abides. She opens herself to the presence of Christ. And the presence is the source of transformation, not activity, not accomplishments, just presence, just being there. To dwell with God is to become like God. That's the answer to the Psalm 15 riddle, isn't it? Who could dwell in this presence? Only God could. Slowly, steadily, imperfectly, but truly, Christ helps us become like God. And that formation happens not by willpower, but by communion. What does that look like? Let me tell you about somebody that I knew. Whenever I was my kid's age at church, there was somebody who at the time I thought was ancient, who I'm sure now I would not think so. Then in my eyes, this older man at church when I grew up. I don't know if there were more than like two other families that would have known his name besides ours. He didn't like people. He liked a few people, but not most. He wasn't flashy. He was never nominated for elder or deacon. And if he was, he wouldn't have accepted. But he's always kind to me. He always showed up early to help out at church. Never asked what he could do, just found things that needed to be done and did them. He gave quietly when people were in need. He and his wife would often sneak newspaper cutouts of the honor roll listing to the parents and living on their garage doors, taped there with laminated for them so they could have something to be proud of their kids for. They never rang the doorbell, they just left it taped there. He told the truth, even when it cost him. Nobody called him holy. If you're asking anybody in church, who are the holiest people in this building, his name would not have ever been a contender. In fact, his background left him checkered at best. He was a very interesting fellow, but he spent his time during World War II as a skiing sniper in the Alps, and it haunted him for the rest of his life. And he was not on anybody's short list of holiness material. But he dwelled with God. And if you knew him, you could see it. He didn't tell you, but you could tell there was something. You could tell that's what held him together. He dwelled with God. You could feel it. He's the face I see whenever I read Psalm 15. Somebody who says, who could possibly be this? Because they have no clue. They've already started to become this. Because they don't see it in themselves. That's the face I put on Psalm 15. Because it's not about performing virtue. It's not about moral superiority. It's about what happens when grace takes root. People who live in God's presence start to look like God's presence. Not instantly, not perfectly, but truly. And that brings us here to this particular table in the middle of the room. Psalm 15 begins with that question, who could dwell in your tent? And here's the answer. Anyone that Christ deems worthy to invite. Those who come hungry, those who come trusting, those who come open to grace. Do they look righteous and blameless and just and true? Not most days, not even close. But they've been invited nonetheless. Here at this table, we don't prove our worth. We receive the worth of Christ. Here, we do not earn a place. We are given one. And the God who once dwelled in a tent now dwells in bread and wine and body and spirit, in a gathered community of people being formed into the likeness of Christ. Though they have no idea why or how, and they don't ever possibly see a way to an end, it's just the way it is. We are the people who dwell in the house of the Lord because God got tired of waiting around for us to figure it out and chose to dwell within our houses. We are the people who dwell with the holiness of God and the glory of God, not because we are perfect enough, but because God decided Christ could be perfect enough to make this work. So come to this table, dwell with the holy. Let the presence of God make you something whole again. Let's stand and sing.